Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the City Council meeting, the regular business meeting for Tuesday, August 28th, 2018. The time right now is 7 p.m. Ms. Baker, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cutterback, Rasmussen, and Davis.
Thank you. And we heard from Councilmember Gamble and also Councilmember Hanford at a previous meeting that they would not be here this evening. So without objection, we'll consider them as excused. We heard from Councilmember Camp that he may be late this evening. Will everybody please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge my allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The first item that we have on our agenda this evening is under announcements and presentations. This is item number one, AB 18-178, presentation recognition of service canine Lexi.
She's very hyper. This is really a sad moment. This is actually a good time for her, but it's sad for the department. We're losing a comrade who's been with us for 8 years and who's done a lot for the city of Monroe and a lot for Snohomish County. Lexi is a drug dog, and as we talked to some of the cases that she worked with her handler, Nate Erdman, alerts are when she detects narcotics, correct? Okay, so Lexi came to the department in 2010. She went through training, and Officer Nate Erdman has been with her ever since. Through her career, Canine Lexi's alerts for the city of Monroe and for outlying agencies have led to the numerous cases against local drug dealers, probably in the 50s, 60s. We made a lot of arrests. We did a lot of search warrants on these individuals. Lexi also assisted federal investigation involving large-scale narcotics distributions and additional drug seizures. One federal case that Lexi was involved in was narcotics, but she also was able to detect a person who had 12 firearms that were all stolen throughout the county, and we were able to take those in. Another case Lexi was involved in was a traffic stop where she found 1/2 pound of heroin combined with methamphetamines and a large amount of prescriptions. And then while assisting the Drug Enforcement Agency, DEA, Canine Lexi located more than 1 pound of methamphetamines, 2 pounds of cocaine hidden inside a residence during a search warrant. That's a lot of drugs. Also, we had a call at one of our storage units. Lexi went there and with the officer, and they could smell marijuana. She was able to find the compartment where the drugs were stored, the facility, the unit, and we found 30 pounds of marijuana in there, and also this led to a number of search warrants throughout Snohomish County. Lexi's also participated in outreach programs. She has done exhibitions, drug-related exhibitions in the high schools, service clubs, and then you probably saw her. She was performing a National Night Out this year, and the kids love her. Who couldn't love this little beast? I have a lab at home, so I'm very partial to labs. After 8 years of service, Canine Lexi will retire to Officer Erdman's home, where she will spend the rest of her time with her friend, a yellow lab by the name of Sadie. And her and Sadie get along really well. I just want to say it's sad to lose Lexi. She's helped us out there in the field hundreds of times probably, and a lot of the work that she does is when we stop vehicles, we have suspicion that it could be narcotics in the vehicle. She does the searches for us. I would just like to say, I'd like to give a big thanks to a true hero of law enforcement, Canine Lexi, and her handler, Officer Nate Erdman, for all the things that they have done for the city of Monroe and the county of Snohomish County over the years, and just a big hand to them. Little treats here. These are all local treats for her. Members of the department. Where's these? Let's see what I got for you. Would the mayor come forward?
Councilmember, please join me.
Yeah, okay. You can try. I don't ever caught that.
All right. Lexi, come here. There's a camera that way. Okay.
Nobody has these. Okay, thank you. There you go.
Thank you. The next item, please let the record show that Councilmember Camp entered chambers. The time right now is 7:07 p.m. All right, the next item that we have on the agenda this evening is announcements and presentation item number 2. It's proclamation Swift Night Out. Whereas the Vox's Swift is a unique bird as they look and act like swallows, but their closest relative is the hummingbird. And whereas the Vox's Swift is the smallest out of the 4 North American Swifts, measuring 4 3/4 inches in length with a wingspan of 12 inches. And whereas the Vox's Swift use their claws to cling to rough surfaces, such as a chimney, rather than perch in trees. Whereas the migratory patterns of Vox's Swift extend as far south as Mexico to as far north as Canada. And whereas Monroe, Washington is an annual roosting spot for the Vox's Swifts, and several thousand Vox's Swifts migrate through Monroe each spring and fall season. And whereas the Vox's Swifts roost in the Frank Wagner Elementary School chimney, and the Pilchuck Audubon Society, Monroe School District and City of Monroe host an annual Swift Night Out for the community to celebrate this event. And whereas the decommissioned Frank Wagner Elementary chimney is recognized as an important communal migratory roosting site in North America with up to 20,000 Vox's Swifts resting in the chimney in any given night. And whereas the City of Monroe has designated the Vox's Swift as the official city bird, and whereas the Monroe community supports and attends the annual Swift Night Out, and 2018 will be the 10th year the event will be celebrated. Now, therefore, I, Jeffrey Thomas, proclaim Saturday, September 8th, 2018, as Swift Night Out in the City of Monroe, Washington, and encourage residents and businesses and visitors to participate and attend events during Swift Night Out. We do have Dr. Smith here tonight to receive this proclamation on behalf of the Monroe School District. Council, please come on up.
I was going to say,
I know.
I'm like, this is the biggest slobber in my hands.
Yeah. Definitely a slobber.
It's a different day. It's been other times. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, the next item that we have on our agenda this evening is public comments. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matters that are subject to a public hearing. We do have a sign-in sheet. Yvonne, please come forward, please.
Hi, my name is Yvonne, and I'm with the Monroe Chamber of Commerce, and I just wanted to take a quick minute to say thank you. The Fair Days Parade was Saturday, and it was a great, huge success. I think every year we get better and better, and the partnership that the Chamber has with the City and the Monroe School District is just phenomenal, and I just want to say thank you, because I, you know, even talking to other organizers of other parades, I feel just a little bit spoiled on how lucky I feel sometimes that the Chamber and the City and the school districts all work so well together. And so huge thanks to all of you for allowing us to partner with you on this great event. And it was 81. So here's to 82, and it's going to be even better and bigger, and the little bit that I miss, I will make sure to fix. So, but thank you to Dr. Smith and all for her crew and City Council and Monroe Public Works and Parks and Rec and the Police Department. You guys were all very, very awesome and helpful. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And Yvonne?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, it's okay. This is spearheaded a lot through the Chamber. Thank you also for everything that you did to help pull this together. I really appreciate it. And the same thing, since Deka, you're here, the school district, I always forget about that every year, but walking down there, I saw all of your school employees out there.
33
school employees. Yeah. You've got a lot of personnel out there supporting it. I really appreciate the work that both of your organizations do. It's an important part of our community, and thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Vaughn.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak to the City Council this evening? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Council Member Rasmussen.
Motion to approve consent agenda.
Second.
I have a motion to approve the consent agenda from Council Member Rasmussen with a second from Council Member Cutterback. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Next item we have on the agenda this evening is unfinished business item number one. This is AB 18181. Lobbyist, Public Affairs Representative, Interviews and Selection. Ms. Knight.
Thank you, Mayor. At the last regular meeting, the City Council reviewed the proposals and contract recommendation from staff on the two finalists for the City's Lobbyist Public Affairs Consultant, and the Council asked to bring back the two finalists and have an opportunity to speak with them and potentially interview them. So staff has provided some interview questions to prime the pump. You are welcome to use those, ask additional questions, or not use those questions at all. It's completely up to you as to how you want to handle those interviews. I would like to just briefly introduce the two consultants, the finalists, and then we'll ask Sarah Davenport-Smith to leave the room while you interview Al Aldrich from Strategies 360, and then we'll reverse that for the second interview. So, Al, why don't you go ahead and stand up? This is Al Aldrich with Strategies 360, and we're going to interview Al first, and then we have Sarah Davenport-Smith here, and she will be your second interview, and she brought her consultant with her. Thank you so much. So, Sarah, why don't you go ahead and step out of the room, and we'll start with Mr. Aldrich. So do you have the questions there in front of you, Council? Those were a separate sheet. Mm-hmm. And there's four prepared questions, and I don't know who wanted to start off.
While you're shuffling through that, let me just say that Mayor Thomas, Council Members, Deborah, Zach,
I'm Al Aldrich, as Deborah said. I'm happy to be here tonight. Look forward to your questions.
Thank you.
So it sounds like Mr. Camp, maybe perhaps?
Councilmember Camp, would you like to lead off?
Sure, I'll even use the question. Thank you for coming tonight. Please describe your experience as a lobbyist working with local government municipalities and identify your major achievements in the position related to transportation, budget, or other categories. And I apologize, I grabbed the wrong pair of glasses when I walked out the door today, so I'm sorry.
Well, at least you don't have to wear glasses all the time like that. I don't have that problem. Thanks for the question. The last 23 years, I've been a state lobbyist here in the state of Washington. From 95 to 2006, I was the first government affairs director at Snohomish PUD. And then in 2006, I left to join the firm I'm with now, Strategies 360. So next session will be my 24th year consecutively as a state lobbyist. Most of my clients are in the public sector. I came from the public sector, as I just described. I understand the public sector, understand how things work. Some things are different between ports and PUDs and transit agencies and cities, and a lot of things are pretty similar in my experience. So I understand those policies. I have a very good track record of securing transportation grants and capital budget grants. The biggest one I had was in the 2015 Connecting Washington package. I got, for my clients here in Snohomish County, $320 million worth of projects, which was just under half that the entire county got out of that package. That $320 million includes projects for the City of Marysville, City of Arlington, Tulalip Tribes, and the Highway 9 Coalition, although I wasn't still working for them at that time, but I've been working on that. It takes some years, in my experience, to set up for big transportation packages and the projects in there. The good news is, I'll just mention, recently Senator Hobbs, who's the chair of the Senate Transportation Package, mentioned that he is completely open to talking about a small package. Small in this case means maybe 5 cents of gas tax money compared to 12 cents that was in the 2015 package. So that's good news for anybody who's looking for money for transportation projects. The two presumed anchors, if they're ready to go, is replacing the US 2 westbound trestle and replacing the I-5 bridge at Vancouver. But there will be a number of smaller package or projects around that. The practical matter is you've got to spread out the project so that you get votes from legislators from around the state, basically. In the 2018 supplemental transportation package that we just approved in March, had two grants of $500,000 each for two clients here in the county. Capital budgets in 2017 and 2018, for those 2 years, I had more than $20 million for various clients. Let me stop there, I guess. I'm also happy to tell you a little bit about how we operate when we're in Olympia, but I'll save that maybe if it fit in with something else.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Councilmember Davis.
Can I just do a follow-up
yes.
question? Councilor sorry, Kodak. I should do this. Thank you for that overview.
Sure.
So with getting money on the for transportation out of the transportation budget, it looks like your current list of registered clients, you have City of Arlington and Marysville and other cities. How do you balance going in for kind of the same dollars?
Yeah, mostly it breaks down by legislative districts rather than cities in a particular county or something. So for example, of my current city clients, Arlington's the only other one in 39th LD. So, and they are gonna have, I think, a pretty small request. So there's a transportation budget in every odd numbered year. They do a 2 year transportation budget. And then every now and then you have a bigger package. Mm-hmm. So stuff in the $1-2 million range is fair game in the 2 year transportation budgets usually, meaning they do grants of that size. Doesn't mean everything you get asked gets it, but that's the size you can sort of deal with. Once you get above a couple $1 million, it gets tougher and you may have to wait for the next package. But based on my experience, with the 05 package and the 15 package, there's a lot more stuff that's around the periphery that gets sort of dropped off for various reasons, not ready to go, bad lobbying, whatever, to end up with the package they had. For example, in the 2015 package, when we started serious discussions of that in probably 2012, there was officially identified $80 billion worth of transportation need around the state. We ended up with 16, and that was, you know, 12-cent increase in gas tax. It's a significant increase in taxes that paid for the project we did. So, to circle back to the beginning of your question, in my experience, it's not that much of a problem that I have clients that are sort of clustered in the county because they're in different legislative districts. And at the end of the day, it's making the case for your project and working with the key decision makers on the committees. Senator Hobbs is from Lake Stevens. That's good news for us because he knows, he's familiar with all the projects pretty much around Snohomish County and nearby. Judy Cliburn, who has been the chair of the House Transportation Committee for a number of years, is retiring at the end of the year. The likely person to be the new House Transportation Chair is Representative Jake Fye from Tacoma. Through a quirk, I happened to be personal friends with Jake for over 30 years. When I was running conservation programs at Snohomish PD, he was running them at Tacoma Power, and we've stayed in touch. I support him in city council races and legislative races and stuff like that. If he's not the chair, then probably the chair is going to be Gail Tarleton from Seattle, who I also know pretty well. And then I was just talking to Deborah before the meeting. If you look at the House Transportation Committee, a lot of the Republicans on there are either retiring or they're behind at their primary. So we're going to have to reload some solid House Republicans to that committee. I'll probably talk to Representative Eslick about that next time I see her, because that's a concern. We need some people from, you know, this area, I think, to support the projects in this area.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
You probably understand one of our pet projects is 522.
Yes.
And I thought I heard you say that the big money that has already been allocated, that the highway SR2 trestle has already been allocated money?
No, I think what I said, or what I meant to say, is that the two presumed anchors for the next package are replacing the US-2 westbound trestle, which is in Senator Hobbs' district, and there's been a pretty strong case made about the age and susceptibility to earthquakes and stuff like that, and the replacing the I-5 bridge at Vancouver, with Vancouver and Portland. There was a pretty good effort underway back in 2012 to get that in the package, and then there was, frankly, a political meltdown in Clark County in 2013, and that just died. And the politics have gotten better in Clark County, so I think there's going to be a pretty serious effort to replace that bridge again. And then they'll fill in. So the US-2 trestle is about a $1 billion project, and the bridge is about $1.5 billion, if I remember the number correctly. So that's $2.5 billion. And if you go 5 cents, you know, it gets you into the $5-6 billion range. So the rest of that money is other projects like 522, accelerating that, or other projects. And really, most of the, I'm pretty active here in Snohomish County. I live here when I'm not in Olympia. I'm active in SCID, the Economic Alliance. The other projects in the county are really just starting to shape up. I mean, people know their schedule from the Connecting Washington package, because that $16 billion package was a 16-year package, but they're really just starting to shape up their new projects. So in that sense, you're in pretty good shape. You're not behind the curve. And I have some other clients that better start figuring out your projects and starting the write-ups on them, because you don't want to be behind the curve when they go into session in January.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions on experience? Okay. Councilmember Davis, would you like to lead
sure.
us off with number two?
Yeah. Could you describe your approach for working with legislators and elected officials at the local government level with differing opinions and priorities? And could you possibly provide an example of how you approach or your approach resolved a conflict in this regard?
Sure. So in general, I try to establish relationships with people before I need to ask for something. Being around for a while gives me a benefit in that regard. I know most of the legislators from around the state, not all of them certainly, but I know a lot of them. I also have clients outside of Snohomish County, so I know legislators from some other parts of the state, and that's helpful as we get in, because we may not have very good representation on certain committees from, say, Snohomish County. In general, in working with them, I find it important to be able to state what the problem is, what the solution we're looking for is, and indicate some flexibility, assuming that the client's given me that, to work out the problem. I typically focus on the committee that, or committees that the bill's going to go through. We try to get, if I'm doing a piece of work for a client, say if I was doing work for you guys, I would look at those committees and I would try to get sponsors both from your local area, because that's going to be a question if you don't have sponsors from the 39th, and sponsors from the committee, because if the bill's going through that committee, you already want to have some people knowledgeable and prepared to vote for it if at all possible. If there are people that are going to be opposed to it, try to talk to them ahead of time and figure out what the problem is, see if we can get them to acquiesce, just let it go. You know, this is not the fight you want to have. If we can't, then we'll try to figure out a way to, if we can modify our bill to accommodate their needs without hurting the client. If we can't do that, then we'll just try to muscle them. An example, it took, this is incredible in retrospect, it took 3 years to pass a bill for Marysville and Arlington. So Marysville in particular, as you probably know, is very eager to have industrial manufacturing facilities come into their area, particularly North Marysville. They want to smooth out their tax base, which is heavily retail and property tax on homes these days. So they wanted to have the option of exempting taxes on the improvements made to property for manufacturing industrial companies that came into that area. And they had, the legislature will only do that if you have a number of checks and balances. They had to have 25 jobs that paid more than $18 an hour and some other stuff. So we got legislators from the area behind that bill. And then we ran into problems at the House Finance Committee. It was a very odd thing. It was like an accordion. Some people wanted to loosen up the bill so that their clients or their counties could participate in it, and some other members were nervous about it, even though state taxes were off the table. We weren't affecting state taxes, only local taxes, and so they were concerned about even letting that go, and we discussed with them the nature of letting local jurisdictions decide how to spend their money. And you know, I said, even if you don't agree, if Marysville and Arlington think that's going to attract businesses, why would you interfere with letting them make that decision and forego taxes for 10 years under all the other checks and balances we have in there? Well, we worked, Senator Pearson was very helpful on that bill, and Arlington, of course, in a little slice of Marysville, is in the 39th, so he had some engagement in that. And we worked that, took 3 years to finally get that thing done, but we did. He worked with colleagues on the Senate side, and I worked with June Robinson from Everett, and Reuben Carlisle, who at that time was the chair of the House Finance Committee, so he had control of the bill until it went to the floor, who's from Seattle, and he just sort of intellectually had a problem, I guess, with doing that. But finally, he let go of it and said, okay, you're right, if they want to do that, I don't think it's going to work, but if they want to do that, let them go. And we got a couple of other people. Meanwhile, we had to elbow off Puyallup, who wanted to come in with converting warehouses to higher value property. We said, that's not what this is about. This is about new construction that meets all the other tests, you know, for manufacturing industrial, not converted. If you want to run your own bill, run your own bill. Next year, I'll be happy to support it, but don't burn down our bill because you're trying to pile onto it. He actually did that in year two. Year three, we got him elbowed out, and we were able to get past in year three. But that's a fairly specific example of how we did a bill. It didn't seem like a big deal at the time, frankly, to let local jurisdictions exempt that if they want to, but took 3 years to get that done. It often takes 2 years to get a policy bill done, just because you got to educate people to get to that point. And you know, sometimes you got a bill like that bill, that ended up being for Marysville, Arlington, and Lake Stevens. That was a sweet spot that worked. It was small enough for the people wanted small. It was just big enough for the legislators that cared in Snohomish County. It's kind of a pilot program in some respects. If we can get a coalition around a bill, that's the better way to go, frankly, because you get more people involved. Several years ago now, probably 2013, the lobbyists for Puyallup and I was working for Marysville on this bill. We both had a problem that the Department of Corrections was releasing a lot of sex offenders into their areas and not giving them much notice. And because it was at the bottom of the housing market, you had a couple of entrepreneurs who were buying up houses and then stuffing six sex offenders in the house. Well, you can imagine, I was freaking out neighbors. And so we ran a piece of legislation that put some sideboards on the Department of Corrections and made them do more communication with local jurisdictions about how they were releasing people out into the communities. The first version of the bill, Corrections came back and said, that's going to cost $800,000. We said, whoa, what are you talking about? And they showed us how they did their calculations. So we changed the bill that got it down to about, as I recall, $140,000, which was a more palatable number for the legislature, and we got that bill passed. So you have to work with the agencies. If there's agency involved, you got to work with other legislators, other lobbyists, if that's the case. And Tacoma was interested in that bill. They didn't want to go officially on it, but they helped in rounding up votes for that bill also, because they had a smaller version of that problem, sex offenders clumping up into certain neighborhoods.
Any follow-up questions?
Yeah.
Councilmember Cutterback.
So you talked about building relationships before you have to go make the ask, which sounds smart. So how would you go about doing that with new people down in Olympia? How do you do that?
Yeah, typically we'll schedule a meeting within the first couple of weeks of the session. I mean, we'll know by mid-November who wins the general election. We may not know their legislative assistant until we get closer into December, but as soon as we know, we'll schedule a meeting to go introduce ourselves, especially if they're from an area where I have a client. So it's Snohomish County, Grant County, Clark County, some of those places. Frankly, we study their backgrounds and look for places of connection so that, they say, oh yeah, I remember Al, he went to WSU2, or he has an uncle who's a berry farmer, or whatever it is that might make a connection. And we try and do that with as many of those people as we can, especially on the committees that are of highest interest to us. There's certain committees hardly ever deal with. Law and justice is one I hardly ever deal with, just for example. But local government, state government, transportation, the energy committees in the two chambers are ones I typically deal with the most for my clients. And so those are the committees I tend to focus on, the members of those committees. So especially for new members, that's typically the way I approach that.
Thank you.
Okay. Sure.
Any other follow-up questions? Councilmember Rasmussen, would you like to ask the next one?
Sure. Please describe your knowledge of the City of Monroe's legislative priorities and rank them in order of importance.
I think I know your priorities pretty well. The ranking part might be a little more difficult. 522, as I understand, is the one that has the biggest mind share anyway right now. And that I've traveled that road not on a regular basis, but periodically to get a flavor of it since we put our proposal in. That's a tough nut. I think we can move up and get some of the money for the pre-engineering, that kind of stuff. Moving the $10 million in Connecting Washington forward is going to be difficult. So far, they haven't moved money around within the Connecting Washington package because they know as soon as they do, then everybody and their brother is going to come in with a request to do the same kind of a thing. But with Hobbs and Phi, I think we have a pretty good chance at that. Hobbs probably familiar with the 522 problem. Jake may not be. See if we can get him up here for a taste of it before too long. That worked pretty well with Judy Clifford and Highway 9 and getting that new bridge over the Snohomish River in the package because she got squished in traffic one afternoon coming up for an event. Beyond that, I know you have some park and recreation things you'd like to do. You both have some specific capital budget requests that I've seen, and I think starting last year, and I've seen some correspondence with Doug Levy, who represents the Washington Parks and Recreation Commission, or whatever it is, trying to create some flexible new tools, perhaps. There's a meeting in September where Doug's coming up to meet with some local legislators. He's got a series of meetings to sort of lay out some ideas and test and see which ones seem to get more traction and stuff. So if we end up representing you, I'll probably attend that meeting in September. There's a Boys and Girls Club here that I think needs some work, if I recall, on your capital budget list. Deborah and I have had some conversations about annexations, too. I think the trick there is going to be to figure out if that's a Monroeville or if there's some other communities around the state that we can get enough to make it an AWC bill, which is something else I'll just mention since I brought up AWC. So we're pretty professional about our lobbying work. We have an office in Olympia, two blocks off the Capitol campus. There's at least three of us there every day during session, which is important so that we can. There's a lot of days where you have multiple meetings at the same time, committee meetings at the same time, or a lobbyist meeting and committee hearings or something like that. So you got to have multiple people to be able to cover all that stuff. AWC has two lobbyist meetings every week, Monday noon and Thursday dinner meeting, where you go over the schedule for the next week. We always have at least one person at those meetings because they're important to stay in the conversation flow at AWC, to trade information with other lobbyists. That's what we do. I mean, AWC has five lobbyists, and there's probably another 12 or 15 of us that are contract lobbyists who are there on a real regular basis. representing other cities and stuff like that. On transportation, there's also a 7 a.m. Wednesday meeting every Wednesday during session, a group called the Washington Highway Users Federation. There's about 20 or 25 pretty serious transportation lobbyists. Fortunately, I'm a morning guy, so I can make that 7 a.m. meeting on Wednesdays before we get into hearings starting at 8 o'clock. But those are the kinds of groups and steady flows of information that I think, in my experience, that you just need to be involved in to properly represent your clients and their interests and those sort of things. Let me stop there. Did I answer the question?
Any follow-up? Councilmember Cutterback?
So you mentioned three lobbyists in your Olympia office. Are those in? Are those people listed in the
packet? I think so. Typically, we have myself, Paul Barron, and A.J. Dotsauer. A.J. took last year off to get a graduate degree. She's back now. She got back this week, I guess. And then in a long session, we have often had an intern to help out doing some other routine stuff in there. It's if you're paying an intern, it's not hard to get people interested in political experience. And a long session is a lot easier to get that in than a short session. Things are crazy in a short session. Long session is more... It's longer, but it's also more methodical, I guess you'd say, or something. That's one nice thing about the legislature in this state, unlike Congress. We actually have cutoff points that matter for almost all bills. So there's a rhythm and flow to it, and if you've been lobbying for a while, you know what that rhythm and flow is. There's a critical cutoff.
So in here listed under your investment, you have the lobbyist work, and you have it two separate places. One is it just for the 3 months and the 9 months? Is that the difference? You know what I'm referring to?
No, I think we're in it for state work. I don't remember how the federal people, my federal colleagues, put their work. I think ours is $4,000 a month and like $1,500 of expenses, which is mostly mileage.
Right. Okay. And then the federal is separate.
It's separate, and I believe off the table at this point.
Okay.
Any other follow-up questions? I do have one follow-up question. One of the challenges that we've had with 522 is that the portion of 522 that's within the 39th legislative district has been approved.
Okay.
The portion that is remaining that needs to be improved is in the first. Yeah. It's been a point of frustration for me to learn how funding allocation goes for transportation projects, especially when they cross district lines, and in this case, the majority of the population is basically from that Paradise Lake Road intersection to the south and to the west for the first legislative district. So for somebody in that first legislative district, it's a real hard sell to people that they represent that you need to improve the segment of road that doesn't benefit the people that live in the district that vote for those folks on a day-to-day basis. What sort of approach would you use to try to widen out the roadway there when it's benefiting people outside of the first legislative district?
Well, the 39th is still going to care because if you're coming from Bellevue or Redmond up here, you're still going to get to the 39th, and so they're still going to care about
sure.
it. And first, guy, Senator Palumbo lives in Maltby, so he's got to be very familiar with that sort of thing. I know him pretty well from his campaign, from working with him on energy issues. He took the summer off this year. He's not in cycle. He's not up for re-election. So he took the summer off. Now that we're coming up on Labor Day, I think I can get a meeting with him in September, and we can sit down and talk about that. Representative Stanford and Representative Kloba, Stanford's not on transportation. I need to go talk to Kloba and get to know her, frankly, a little better. But I think we can even push it down that corridor, because if it backs up coming up 522, it's going to back up in Woodinville and all that other area down there. And, you know, so that's the personal connection thing. And you're right, Mayor, that is important. On the other hand, there's just straight logic. That's one of the bigger bottlenecks in the metro area. And I think a lot of legislators know that. And I think it's getting a few other key ones to know and understand that. Representative Harmsworth was just appointed to be the ranking minority person on the House Transportation Committee. He's also trailing by 7 or 8 points. I'm not sure he's going to make it back to the legislature. They're going to have to pick a new ranking member if they do, and that's going to be a key person, plus any of the other generally friendly Republicans. I mentioned the problem on the House side. I mean, that's part of what we do, too, is we look at the committees and figure out who's going and coming and stuff like that. And I'm concerned because the, like, one or two House Republicans right now, unless, well, several were just flat retiring, and then there's a couple like Representative Hayes, who we've worked with very well in the past from Camino Island, Stanwood area, and Representative Harmsworth from Mill Creek, who are trailing, and I don't know if they're going to be able to, you know, make up that ground in the general. I hope so, but I'm not sure of that. So we're having to do contingency plans to figure out who we expect to be working with. They're not going to pick a freshman to be the ranking member. It's going to be somebody else who's already on the committee or has wanted to be on transportation. So we've just got to figure some of that stuff out. Talk to J.T. Wilcox, who's the new top guy in the House Republicans or something, and figure out what they're going to do. They won't officially do that till the House Committee days is in early December. The Senate days are in mid-November, where they have, each committee has a hearing. They talk about the stuff they're going to do, and then they also get together separately and figure out assignments for committees. So we won't officially know until, I think it's the 12th and 13th of December for the House. But we can get some good ideas once we know who's back and who's not coming back to the legislature. If we're selected to represent you guys, I would get on it with Columbia. Well, I already said I'll meet with Columbia. I need to meet with him on some other stuff anyway. But get with Stanford and Clova to get them warmed up on that, and try to do some additional figuring out of who's likely to be coming back on that committee, or who we, like Representative Eslick, we can convince to sign up for that committee or request an appointment on that committee.
Okay. Thank you. Just a commentary. It's been really frustrating to see that we allocate funding on a legislative district basis and not by a corridor basis. Would almost be better if we could just change the rules of the game. So,
yeah.
Any other follow-up?
The other
questions?
Piece I would just say is, again, if selected, I'd want to sit down with you and Deborah and your engineer and talk about your relationship with WashDOT and what's going on there, because at the end of the day, there's sort of a merging together of interests, and you could have a giant hole in the road. If WashDOT said it wasn't there, you probably don't get funded for it. So that'd be important to me to figure out how you're working and who you're working with at WashDOT and some of that stuff, because that eventually bleeds down to the discussions in Olympia.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you. Yeah. Any follow-up on my follow-up? All right, let's go into the next question. Councilmember Cutterback.
Please tell us why you and your firm or organization will provide the highest level of lobbying services to the city and its constituents.
Okay, some of this is going to sound like a repeat.
Right.
But, so I'm from the county, so I got a little more allegiance than perhaps some of those would have. That's probably not an issue in your consideration tonight. We have most of the firms in Olympia are one- or two-person firms, in my experience. And we've got at least three people on the ground, so that allows us to get to more meetings, more hearings, more whatever, and we're there every day. And that does matter, even in a 105-day session, it does matter, because you're constantly seeing, running into people, reminding about that, following up on something. So that's a big benefit, I think, for our firm in terms of representing clients, is we've got more people there, we can do more coverage of that. Lots of years in the process. Between myself and Paul and AJ, we've got something over 40 years. I got 23 myself, and that matters too. We know the people in the governor's office, Charles Knudsen, and the other people. We know a lot of the agency liaisons. That's their name for lobbyists. And you know, although I learn something new every year about process, I pretty well understand the process down there. And when you hit the gas, and when you can afford to not press somebody on something. And for some bills, a couple of key sponsors is all you need, and for other bills, having 10 or 12 sponsors is a better signal to send to people. It depends a little bit on how you're doing it. If we're doing a policy bill, whether you write a narrow title or a broad title matters. I won't bore you with why, but it does, in terms of keeping people off your bill or sending signals about how narrow or broad it might be. And there's a lot of sort of tricks of the trade, I guess, for lack of a better term. And you learn by experience. I've enjoyed my meeting so far with Mayor Thomas and Deborah. I know the local legislators very well because of my years of experience. To me, that's how you're going to get the best representation value.
Thank you.
Any follow-up questions? Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Aldridge.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll step out and wait till the call back in.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
So the way we have this set up is we've got four suggested questions for the council members. We'll go ahead and just sort of go down the line. We'll start off on the far side because we started off on this side before. And council members may want to ask follow-up questions. I'll just go ahead and acknowledge them for the floor and they'll ask the follow-up questions. So thank you very much for coming this evening.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me and the opportunity to go for this position as your lobbyist and public affairs representative. It's an honor.
Thank you. So we'll start off with council member Scarborough.
Okay.
Good evening.
Sarah Davenport-Smith.
Please describe your approach for working with legislators and elected officials at the local government level with differing opinions and priorities, and provide an example of how your approach resolved a conflict in that regard. Oh, I'm sorry, I took number two.
You can go back.
You go back.
You can go in any order you want.
That's
okay. Okay. Well, among local governments, you said. Okay. Well, I have been a city council member before I became a lobbyist, and during that time as a city council member, and even as I stepped into my lobbying career, I've worked with a lot of different people who have a lot of different opinions and are very passionate about those opinions. And one of the things that I always try to look for is what's the common ground. There's normally some common ground that we can always find, something that we can always work toward. And we can leave those other differing opinions aside and focus. And that's one of the things I've been able to help people do, is to focus on what's our common goal. And one thing that I could use as an example is actually between a state agency and a city government. And they had a difference of opinion, and unfortunately that difference would have amounted to about $140,000 fine for this particular city. And when things were all said and done, it amounted to just people wanting to make sure that roles were understood. What are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do? What are we responsible for, and what are we responsible for? And now those two entities are working together very well, and we're actually working for a piece of legislation that will be coming forward this next session, and it will actually help every single city in the state of Washington once this is all said and done, and we're actually bringing in some other groups too. So finding the common ground and then also finding other people who share that common ground to build that collaboration is something that a tool that I use a lot and seem to be pretty successful at.
Thank you.
Any follow-up questions? Okay, Councilmember Cutterback, would you like to ask question number one?
Yes, I
can.
Okay. Yep. Please describe your experience as a lobbyist working with local government, municipalities, and identify your major achievements in this position related to transportation, budget, or other categories.
Okay. I will talk about my project, one of my many projects with the city of Granite Falls, so just a little north of here. They have been leading a Boys and Girls Club for a very long time, and bringing everybody together was really, really fun. Again, like I said, collaboration is one of the tools that I use a lot, and trying to find those other groups who have something in common that we can all come together and provide or display and prove a united front that it's not just one person that's saying we need this. It's many, many people, many, many groups that are represented. And we managed to get about $1.6 million for their club, and it was really great working with even private business owners that said we're going to pony up this amount, and the school district, and the local nonprofits, and then actually creating this into a project that wasn't just a Boys and Girls Club, it became a community center. And so we had other community services coming to the table saying, yeah, you're right, actually our building is really broken down, and if we all come together and say that this is the project that we're all going to work on and agree on, the legislators loved that approach, and they loved the idea of also bringing in the emergency services center. It would be an evacuation center as well. Granite Falls didn't have one. And so that was another thing that we were able to tag on, and it made the project look even better, and Granite Falls got their money. All the kids are really happy with the new programs that they're able to offer in the club. It's a great club. And it was really fun trying to get everybody together and be successful with that project. So working with I worked with a lot of legislators during this whole process. That goes without saying. Going into the heads of the committees on the Senate Ways and Means, then they actually have the capital budget side, but now it's all just Senate Ways and Means. But then with the House Capital Budget Committee, I was always in their office and just following up, and I worked with the kids at the Boys and Girls Club to put together a video saying how much they needed the club, and we sent that to all of the legislators on the committee to let them know this is what you're trying to do. And then with the help of Lisa coming up with some very creative and efficient and colorful, concise and to the point white papers, because they don't have a lot of time to read through very lengthy and in-depth proposals. They need to know what are we getting to, and then it's the follow-up, then trying to get a meeting with them. So we had a day on the hill, even from Granite Falls Boys and Girls Club, where we had several people and parents and kids from the club that came down and met with some of the legislators there, and it went over very well.
Do you have experience working with transportation budgets or getting funded transportation packages or projects?
I have done that as a city council member. However, doing the transportation budget is very similar to doing the capital budget as well. And so what I know, a lot of the legislators that are already on those committees, many of them serve on both. I don't know why they would do that, but some of them serve on both. And building relationships is what lobbying is primarily about, is building those relationships and getting those other people that are for your project. So it's not just the city saying, hey, we need money for this. That is all of these other people saying, hey, you need to fund this project. Because when the legislators see that there's a united front coming in support of this one particular project or several particular projects, they're like, okay, we're going to stand up and listen and actually take more heed to these folks over here.
Thank you.
Any follow-up questions? Councilmember Hanford's not here. Sorry. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Please describe your knowledge of the City of Monroe's legislative priorities and rank them in order of importance.
From what I understand is your legislative priorities primarily include the transportation projects. One of the things that I know you're very anxious about is to finish the US 2 bypass. I know that, and I also know that even though it's technically outside of the city limits, the 522 bottleneck is very important as well. I know that you're also interested in getting new funding for the Boys and Girls Club as well. And I did look at your plan, your city comprehensive plan, and saw a lot of the local projects, street projects that you were getting funding for. It looks like quite a few of them you did get funding for already, which is really wonderful. That is the extent of my knowledge of your legislative priorities. I also assumed that there would probably be some further development once you figured out who your new lobbyist and public affairs representative would be. I also know that you guys did want to look at some of the rail crossings too, which I'm very much for. I am local, and I understand the need to get something done about those rail crossings. It always makes me so nervous when I see ambulances on one side of the tracks, a train in between the ambulance and the hospital. That always bothers me. But I know the federal side is not on the to-do list for now. So that is my knowledge of what you're wanting to do. But whatever changes you're needing to add or to make, we can go with that.
Anything further, Councilmember Rasmussen?
Thank you.
Councilmember Scarborough?
What do you, when you say you want to see something done at the rail crossings, what is it that you want to see being done at the rail crossings?
Well, I've grown up in Spokane for a good part of my life until I was in college, and in Spokane, you see a lot of underpasses. And sometimes, we always did the underpasses, and a couple of them, the trains did go over, but there's very few places in Spokane at the major street crossings where you actually see the train obstructing the main streets. So that's what I was hoping to see. And again, coming up, talking with our federal government consultant, that would be Hal Hemestra, he did say that there is funding to address issues like this for cities like Monroe, and he thought that given Monroe's location that it could possibly qualify for even some of the rural funding as well. So he was very excited at the prospect of having you guys look into some federal funding, and can still give you the information about the grants to go for, because the Trump administration is putting funding toward these rail projects like this, especially the crossings. Right now, there is an emphasis on infrastructure. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other follow-up questions? Okay, last of the sample questions, Councilmember Davis.
Please tell us why you and your firm will provide the highest level of lobbying services for the city and for its constituents.
Be happy to. I have been a resident of the Sky Valley area since 2005. My family and I lived in Sultan. I was a city council member there for 8 years. And this is my home. Our church is here. My daughters play sports here in the Monroe area and go to school in Sultan, and so we kind of just consider this part of our town, even though they're two separate towns. I work very hard for each one of my clients. It's not a large firm, it is just me. You're getting all of my energies. And the great thing about having actually more than one client is you have several of them that play off of one another and actually benefit each other. So it's really a nice economy of scale, too, in many respects. But my heart is for this community. And I have, during my time as a lobbyist and even before then when I was focusing more on grants for my clients, I've gotten over $26 million for my clients thus far. And I know that even in the short time that I have been a lobbyist, that I've been very successful for my clients, whether it be for capital projects or for policy changes. So with that, I will. I also have an incredible editor and writer that assists me in a lot of ways. Lisa is fabulous when it comes to communicating the written word with our legislators, because sometimes you only have 3 minutes, sometimes you only have 15, and so sometimes you only have time to meet with their staff. So you want to leave them something that is really important that will catch their eye and will cause them to pause. And she excels at doing that. Not only, she also brings a wealth of experience from past projects that she herself has helped to accomplish as well. So between the two of us, and even if you decide to do a little bit of federal, even with Hal, I think we offer a wide array of services for you that will be just as effective as even a large firm. And you're hiring local.
Thank you.
Okay, any follow-up questions? All right, any other questions? Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Thank you for coming tonight. Actually, I've got two, okay. So hopefully they'll be short.
Okay.
First, if you could describe your contacts in Olympia, who you know, who you're contacting, who you work with, that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, it might be easier to go over committees. The Capital Budget Committee, I focus a lot on the heads of the committees and the vice chairs, of course. The Capital Budget Committee, again, I am very familiar with. I know quite a few of the committee members who are on the Transportation Committee, and even the chair, Judy Cliburn. I've worked with her a lot, and she's been there for a long time, so it's nice that she's still a familiar face down there. I work a lot with the Healthcare Committee for some of my other clients on both the Senate and the House. There are some special committees off-site that I'm a part of as well. I do a lot with, it doesn't matter where in the state the legislators are from. I work with quite a few who reside in Eastern Washington, and then those actually that reside over here as well. And I know their staff members. Oftentimes, if you don't know their staff members, then you're not going to get very far. So you need to make sure that you know their LAs and their assistants and their interns. And I make a point of doing that every single year, because oftentimes they do change. So you go around and introduce yourself and make sure everybody knows who you are and who you're representing. And there's always somebody new to meet, and the only friends I don't have are people I haven't met yet.
Okay, thank you. The next question, you mentioned other clients.
Mm-hmm.
So how, and this is kind of in one of the other questions that we talked about, how will you prioritize Monroe's needs with your other clients if in terms of competition for your time?
Well, there's, it is a good question. When I represent each one of my clients, I mean, each one of them they all have unique needs. None of them are exactly the same, although my two cities, they normally do go for capital budget projects as well. But it typically goes on how much the load is in terms of what the amount of time I will be getting. So if I have a client that only has one project and that's all they're sending me down for, very focused, and this is all I want you doing, I will give them that amount of time for that one project. But when I have a client who has several needs, that my time gets spread out a little more. But two, it also depends if in terms of capital budget or transportation, there are certain time windows where you really have to push the project, and other times where you really have to push those policy projects. And so knowing when those time windows are and whether or not those projects are actually going to go forward, if they're even going to get hearings, you just prioritize your time based on that. But I will be down there 5 days a week, so that's quite a bit of time to give for your needs and the clients as well.
All right. Thank you. That's all.
All right. Thank you. Are there any other questions? Any other follow-up questions? Thank you very much, Ms. Davenport-Smith. You can go ahead and remain in touch and bring in Mr. Aldrich.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms.
I do want to point out to Council that there is one error in here. On the table, on the second page of the agenda bill, it's page 43 of 184. It's the budget table. It lists Strategies 360's proposal at $48,000.
Yeah.
And Sarah Davenport-Smith Municipal Consulting should be $42,000. And then Greenlight Strategies is $60,000.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
It's the second page of the agenda bill.
Page 43.
It's the one that has the tab on it.
Councilmembers, have you located the page?
No.
The page numbering is the red.
It's the red at the very bottom of the page.
Hold on.
Yep. Councilmember Davis has the copy there. Yep. Councilmember Scarborough, you got it.
Yeah. What page is that?
So it's page 43, 184, written in the red.
42.
Mine all
the
And that should be 42,000.
Okay.
Makes more sense.
And the other two are correct?
Other two are correct. We had originally asked for a combination of federal, county, and state, and legislative committee had narrowed that down, and this number wasn't adjusted for that.
And so the background on this then is that the Legislative Affairs Committee met on June 5th to review the responses, and on July 24th, Council received a recommendation to contract with Strategies 360 for lobbying and public affairs representation. Council members, do you have any questions or?
I have a procedural question.
Sure, Council Member Camp.
We, I believe the last time we discussed or discussed a lobbying firm, we did it in the executive session. Are we going to do that tonight?
I don't believe so, Mr. I don't think that, that's appropriate for this discussion.
Okay. Thank you.
So the way that the motion is written now is just there's a move to authorize the mayor to sign a contract for services with, and it's just left blank there for council members to fill that in.
Councilmember Cutterback.
So just a question about the budget for the expense and the cost. So this is for the primary lobbyist contract, but then there's other fees that might happen, correct? That they might get reimbursed for?
Travel
and others. Do we know what we paid for Greenlight when we did that? Do we have a comparison what we think that would add on to the contract?
My recollection is that the Greenlight Strategies contract is $3,800 a month, and I don't recall seeing any additional charges. And so
there wasn't in that.
Right. And okay. So the budget was the $57,600 per year. That's under impact budget. So the 2018 budget includes $57,600.
Okay.
And what we're proposing to do is to contract with one of the two consultants that you interviewed today,
right?
And then the additional funding then would be we're proposing to put towards SDS Municipal Consulting to help with the coalition building for the SR 522 and US 2 projects. That's the next contract that you're going to be discussing.
Right, I saw that on there.
Right, so combined budget, we're trying to stay under then the 2018 budget for the 57. Six or close to that.
And was the primary reason the budget for not looking at including any type of federal lobbying? Or the legislative committee that looked at this? Or
right, and I think that was just a result of two things. One was cost associated
right.
with that, and the second one was not having yet a full discussion with City Council about what your federal priorities are.
Right.
And so I think if that's something that the Council is interested in, we might want to touch on that following the trip to Washington, D.C. in September, and whether or not you want to approach that subject and fund that in the 2020 budget or put some money aside in 2019.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions, Council? Councilmember Cutterback, is your light on or?
It's amber. Sorry, there's amber. So much paper here. It's so much easier on a computer, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Scrolling down, and I've moved everything around in piles. So I would like to make a motion. I appreciate both businesses being here and doing this. I think both would do a wonderful job. I am going to make a motion to authorize the mayor to sign a contract for service with Strategies 360 for public affairs representation for the 2019 legislative session and expressly authorize further minor revisions deemed necessary or appropriate.
First from Councilmember Cutterback, is there a second?
I'll second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Cutterback, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Okay, Councilmember Rasmussen, sorry. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. I certainly want to thank both firms for coming out and speaking with council. I know for me, and I'm sure others would echo just, it's, when you look at this, Councilmember said, a whole lot of paper, and had to dive through it very, very quickly. And hearing the comments, and I think both firms have certainly a wealth of experience. I just want to say and acknowledge that while both representatives are somewhat local, I do appreciate. Sir, from SDS being very local and living in our area and knowing exactly what we have and what we go through, especially with 522. I think either firm could be represent Monroe very, very well. So.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Okay, we'll go ahead and move to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? Okay, motion passes 4-1 with Councilmember Davis voting against. Thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. This is unfinished business item number 2, AB18-182, Coalition Building Facilitation Representative Interviews and Selection. Councilmember Knight, Ms. Knight?
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the staff is requesting that the council authorize the mayor to sign a contract with SDS Municipal Consulting not to exceed $10,000 to assist the city with coalition building for the SR 522 and US 2 capital projects. The challenge that we have been facing over the last year, from my perspective, is just not having adequate time to pull together the coalition that's needed in order to really make the push to get this project on the funded list. And so the proposal is to have that local support to coordinate all of our local businesses and other stakeholders and then be able to assist Al with feeding that information up. I think Ms. Davenport-Smith had mentioned their firm's ability to write really clear and succinct white papers and prepare those materials. And again, I think that's one of the things we just haven't had time for at the staff level. And I think it'll be a great partnership between the city, SDS Municipal Consulting, and Strategies 360. And together, I think we're going to have a lot of success in this upcoming legislative session.
Councilmember Cutterback.
I'm going to make a motion, so thank you. You answered all the questions before when you interviewed, so that helped me make a decision on this, so thank you for that information. And I think with your ability to collaborate and living in this area, you're going to do a wonderful job for us with this, so I appreciate that. Move to authorize the mayor to sign a contract for services with SDS Municipal Consulting not to exceed $10,000 for coalition building facilitation and expressly authorize further minor revisions deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
Yeah, first from Councilmember Cutterback, a second from Councilmember Scarborough for the requested action in Agenda Bill 18-182. Discussion on the motion, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Again, want to thank you for coming out and providing your feedback. And then again, I do want to acknowledge that I think this will be a great move forward for us.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the motion? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move to vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. We'll go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. That next item is new business item number one, AB 18-183, authorized purchase of 2019 police fleet replacement units. Mr. Roberts.
Thank you, sir. Good evening, everyone. The Public Works O&M division works with the different departments in the city every year collaboratively to assess fleet needs for the coming budget cycle. We worked with Deputy Chief Irving on this specific issue, and we were able to assess the police fleet and find 8 units that were in need of replacement. I've lost my screen. It's back. Okay. Sorry about that.
Okay, we've lost our screen.
It's actually Brad.
We lost ours a long time.
He loaned it to me, so
awesome.
If you butter up to him, he might give you. In any case, so unfortunately, the vehicles that meet the needs of the police department are not available after September of 2018 for order. And if we were to wait longer than that to order the new and improved version of that similar size and powertrain vehicle, it won't be delivered until 2020. So that creates quite a bit of a time lag. It's not available for order until July of 19, and then not delivered until 2020. So essentially, if the police were to select a vehicle that works best for them, it wouldn't be delivered for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So that is the request that is in front of you this evening, is to go ahead and order some vehicles that are slated for replacement in 2019 during the 2018 cycle. If they are received in 2018, a budget amendment would be required in order to pay for the vehicles. If they are not received until 2019, they will be also included in the proposed budget that's coming up that the mayor will be bringing forth here in October, I think.
Roughly October 1.
September. Yeah, there you go. Becky's on it. So that's all of my presentation. I'm looking for questions.
Okay. Council members, I didn't see who was up first. Council member Rasmussen.
No question. I'll just move to authorize the purchase of 8 replacement police fleet units in 2018 rather than 2019.
Second.
I have a motion from Council member Rasmussen, a second from Council member Davis. Discussion on the motion. Council member Scarborough.
So you're telling me that you can't get the Ford SUV that you want until 2019, get in 20, and it sounds like you're going to a sedan?
Well,
are you going to a four-door sedan?
No. The specifics of this unit are that it would be similar to the police vehicles that you see now, the Ford Police Interceptor, which more or less looks like a Ford Explorer,
yeah.
To be specific. The order now, Ford's basically terminating the production of this unit, and they're moving into a hybrid unit, which we have looked at. It's the first year of a hybrid unit, and to whatever level, buying the first year of a brand new vehicle has some risk to it. There are always inherent engineering flaws in the first year of production, something of that nature. While we do it as a city, we prefer not to. It's better to get that second year and then beyond, because a lot of those first year flaws are worked out. So it's less cost, lower cost of ownership overall.
So you mean hybrid, are you talking about an electric vehicle?
Well, it's a hybrid, so it's part electric, part naturally aspirated
as
gasoline.
As a police vehicle?
Yeah, as a police vehicle.
It's not
good
a Tesla.
You got radios. Speed.
I'm helicopter.
You're done, sir? Okay. Councilmember Cutterback.
So what is the criteria for replacing a vehicle?
There are several criteria for replacing a vehicle. Depending on the way the unit is used, it can be hours or miles, so a certain benchmark is reached. It can also be calendar years and age. With police vehicles, we have a little bit of a higher criteria than we do most of our other fleet units because of, frankly, they're used and abused. And also, there's a higher expectation for response time to police vehicles. So having one broken down on the side of the road is not generally considered
right.
to be acceptable. And so we want to have a, well, it can happen. So we want to have a very high level response here in Monroe, and I believe that's what council has funded. And I think that we're continuing with those standards going forward. So this isn't an elevated standard or a change in standards.
Okay.
So.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Scarborough?
In considering a hybrid.
Yes, sir.
Batteries have X number of hours. Okay. At what point, how many hours is it projected that you would need to replace the batteries? What is the cost of a new set of batteries, and what is the cost of disposing of the old batteries?
So as a point of clarification, this agenda bill is not addressing purchasing hybrid vehicles. It's addressing avoiding purchasing hybrid vehicles. I actually don't have that information because the new Ford Hybrid hasn't been released for public use
so
yet.
So that's what we get in 20?
That's what's available to us in 20. However, Chevy and Dodge and other manufacturers do make police units. That might be something that the deputy chief and I could discuss and perhaps specify, or perhaps the Ford Hybrid is a better choice, and we'll know more about what the expectations are and the warranties in the factory will be going forward, and we can answer those questions.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Scarborough, my parents have hybrids. They've never had to replace the batteries.
Say again.
My parents happen to have hybrids. They've never had to replace the batteries.
And how long have they had them?
5 years.
Okay. My understanding, we're looking at an 8-year-old vehicle here to replace. So my question, it kind of comes down to, are we going to throw them away in 8 years and replace them, or are we going to have to keep them? And here's a further clarification of where I come from. I had a forklift at the bus barn. I couldn't give it away because the cost of taking the batteries and recycling or getting rid of them was more than the price of the steel in the unit. So I had a heck of a time getting rid of it. So I'm sure batteries have come a long way. I know what the difference is. I know that when I did some research on them back then, the battery life was 6 to 8 years, and the price to replace them and dispose of the old one was prohibitive because the price of the vehicle after 8 years wasn't worth doing the batteries. So if you're going to replace them in 8 years, because that's kind of where you come to anyway, I guess it doesn't matter. I don't know if you get a trade-in value on your old vehicles or not, but that might be something to look at if you're going to trade in a hybrid in 8 years and what it's going to be worth to get you some money back on your vehicle. Just my thought.
Yeah, and
thank you.
Councilmember, I was just sharing my parents' experience. It doesn't mean that that's what they would experience. I
understood. I was sharing my experience at the bus bar.
Yeah, sorry for derailing things. Councilmember Camp.
Well, I'll derail it a little bit more. As the new owner of an electric vehicle, I can tell you that the expected battery life is 10 years without serious degradation. Replacement of the battery on a Nissan Leaf is $5,500. And disposal is handled by the company, so I can't answer that part. And if I can be guaranteed that I won't get a ticket, I'll take you for a ride. You'll be impressed.
You'll have to hide.
Yeah, they're very quick.
They are.
I've driven one
scary
before.
Quick.
You telling me it's a Tesla?
Huh? Oh, no. Okay, I'll leave.
All right. I'm sorry for taking us down a different road. Is there any other discussion on the motion that's on the table? All right. We're going to go ahead and move to a vote. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0.
Phew,
all right. Thank you. We're going to go ahead and go on to new business item number 2. This is AV18-184, ordinance number 021-2018, adopting MMC 12.50, complete streets for first reading. Mr. Feilberg.
Okay. Good evening. The state legislature a few years ago came up with a program called Complete Streets, and it's to encourage cities to make their transportation infrastructure available for all users, such as pedestrians, disabled people, transit riders, freight, cars, bicycles, things like that. So in order to do that, they've set aside some money to incentivize cities to take advantage of that, and the only way to get that money is to have a complete street ordinance that says you will strive in all your transportation, new projects, and rehabilitation projects to allow the streets to be usable by all of the transportation users. So this ordinance would do that. It would set up our policy that we will try to do that. It has a set of exceptions, so we're not held strictly to that if there's some reason not to do that. The cost of doing that outweighs the cost of the project we're doing, or if there's things like if we're redoing downtown and we can't move the buildings out of the way in order to make the street wider, or if there's wetlands and things like that in the area. So this was taken to the P4 committee last month, and they recommended this come back to the council for consideration of adopting the Complete Streets Ordinance, which would allow us to be eligible for the funds, which is the deadline for those, is the application for this round is in December of this year. One of the things about this program is that we have to have a sponsor for our application from a transportation agency such as Washington State Department of Transportation, Department of Health, or some things like the Cascade Bicycle Club, or some walking organizations. So with that, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Could we use some of this for 191st? Would that be?
We're not sure, because the way the program is set, we just tell, we get someone to say, probably not, because it would be more, they want more bicycle-y stuff. We could probably expand the project of 191st, but not do the, because the way 191st is set is basically 8 cars.
I thought we looked at different options.
Different options, but we haven't yet decided.
We
have decided. There is going to be a trail along the side of it, but it's like we expand things, so.
So there's not going to be a sidewalk or a bike?
There's going to be a sidewalk on one side, we think, but right now, the way the costs are going up, there might not be. So that probably wouldn't, and the amount of money we get for it is probably not good for it. Basically, what you do for this grant program is you say to your sponsoring agency, and it would be for what they're interested in, that you kind of want to do this kind of thing. And you show them that you've been doing good things with Complete Streets in the past, like we've been putting in any accessibility ramps,
right.
We've made the wider
sidewalk
downtown, we're doing the trail along Woods Creek Road, the trail
right.
on Chain Link Road, and then they say, yeah, that sounds kind of good. You apply, they sponsor you, the WashDOT awards the money to you, and then WashDOT will come to you and basically establish a program of how to spend the money. So you're not actually applying for a specific project.
Oh, okay.
So it's completely different than any other kind of grant program.
Yeah.
You're basically getting money to do Complete Streets, and then after you get awarded, you decide what you're going to do.
Okay. I did see that it was different where you got the money
And you get the money up front, too.
Instead
yeah.
of reimbursement,
yeah.
which I thought was good. It didn't look like there was much funding from the state. The $10 million, I think,
yeah,
you said here, that's
is,
about,
yeah, so
doesn't
not,
seem like a
lot.
It's
not a lot, right. But there's only currently, I think, when this the information was written, I think it was like 39
yeah.
cities
yeah.
that have Complete Street ordinances. So.
And you were talking about the ordinance itself, and that there, I was looking at the list of exceptions, and I was looking at that and going, by doing this, you know, because it says the City of Monroe shall incorporate Complete
mm-hmm.
Streets infrastructure. And then there's a list of exceptions, but you don't think it pigeonholes us into making sure that we're always looking like 191st, and everything we do, we're looking at doing that.
Yes. We're looking at that in all our streets. That's what we will do. And then you get to take into account the cost of the project and other environmental constraints and things like that.
Okay. And then I saw something where it talks about the decision-making process, so it's looking at Complete Streets, but they talked about, routinely considering options are other people, like pedestrians,
mm-hmm.
cyclists.
Right.
Do they have to have a say in the process in looking at those streets, or is it just that we have to consider
it? We have to consider it, and then the other thing that talks about in the ordinance in section 12.50.050, foster partnerships with other people, interest groups, neighborhoods, and development
right.
Complete Streets infrastructure. So, have more public engagement with the area you're doing it, what kind of things would you like to see, that kind of stuff. And also with the other groups like Cascade Bicycle Club and those people.
Well, I mean, this makes sense to me to be able to get money, and I agree with obviously looking at all the options, and I think we should still look at 191st
yeah.
and look at sidewalks yeah. and pedestrian friendly and a bike path back there. I thought that we had looked at those three options and hadn't made a decision, so I think if there at all is a way to get more funding for that, that would be, I think, a good step. So I don't know if other council members have. I'm done.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Oh, thank you.
So when this was at P4, I think the thing that caught my eye was that a lot of the stuff that typically you find in the safe streets is stuff that we're already doing as the city. As Brett mentioned, the most obvious that we see all the time is the ADA access on the sidewalks. And so, but then going forward, that, you know, if we do get the grant, and we're fortunate enough to get someone to sponsor, and we get the grant, and so forth like that. Brett, if I remember correctly from the P4 committee, you also mentioned that once we're in, our chances of getting it again are much higher.
Well, your chances of getting an award are based on your track record.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you do complete streets stuff, the more likely you are to get it again. So that's where the evaluation criteria is, but progress you've made to creating complete streets.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, I agree. I think this was could be an opportunity. It doesn't have a whole lot of funding to it, but you know, it could be a continuous opportunity for us. So, I'll go ahead and make a motion to move to accept as first reading ordinance number 021-2018. Amending Title 12 MMC by the addition of a new Chapter 12.50, Complete Streets, establishing a new city policy of encouraging the scoping, planning, designing, construction, operation, and maintenance of transportation facilities to safely accommodate pedestrians, bicyclists, public transportation users, motorists, emergency responders, freight, and users of all ages and abilities in accordance with RCW 47.04.320, providing for severability and fixing a time when the shall become effective.
Second. I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen and a second from Councilmember Scarborough for the requested action in Agenda Bill Number 18-184 as typed. Any discussion on the motion?
Please don't make me repeat it.
Yes, fine job.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Seeing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is new business item number 3. This is AB 18185, authorize the mayor to sign memorandum of understanding with Forterra for land acquisition to acquire open space on behalf of the city. Ms. Knight.
Thank you, Mayor. This was an item of discussion at your last council meeting, and the council directed staff to bring this back for consideration of authorizing the mayor to sign the agreement between the city and Forterra. And the purpose of the agreement is to move forward with Forterra negotiating with the property owner for property on the east side of Monroe. I do want to point out one proposed change to the contract that the city attorney is recommending, and if you are able to turn to page 149 of 184, there's a section in there that talks about in the event that the city does not purchase the property from Forterra, that Forterra then would be able to sell the property, and the city would owe the difference then between the purchase price and the sale price. And the city attorney is recommending that we remove that section so the city doesn't have any obligation to pay the difference. And so if the council is comfortable with that, we can make that motion and proceed forward with negotiating the remainder of the contract with Forterra. Okay. Or the memorandum of understanding.
So let me clarify, would the motion be as stated in the requested action with the addition to remove all of section I?
Yes, so it would be section 11B, little b, little I.
11?
11. 11, little b, little I.
Little I. Okay. If anybody's interested in making a motion, you would be to make the motion.
Is that correct?
And to include.
Oh, 5, excuse me. Section 5. Section 2, section 3, section 4, section 5. Oh, excuse me.
Section 5.
My apologies, section 5.
So it's section
5,
subsection B.
Oh no, it would be section, that's B, just little I. Yep,
5, little I.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it would be as typed, the requested action would be as typed with the removal of section 5, little I, on page 7 of 9 of the contract.
Yes.
Concur? Mm-hmm. All right. Councilmember Scarborough.
You answered my question.
You answered the question. Okay. Any other questions or a motion? Councilmember Cutterback.
So I just want to make sure I understand this. So we are, so for Terra, we'll be negotiating with the landowner to purchase that and then leasing it back to us, and we would be paying interest on it during the time that we tried to get grant funding to fully purchase it back from Forterra. Okay. And when I look at the cost estimate, the low and the high, so the city could be somewhere in the range of $221,000 and $540,000 is the range that we would owe. That's outside the purchase price.
Yes.
That's just cost associated with
the purchase, the acquisition?
Right. The closing cost, the interest, all of that.
Correct.
Okay.
And the low and the high are based upon the low appraisal and the high appraisal.
Right. And then we've already have confirmed $500,000 of grant dollars, and we're looking at trying to get more grant money to be able to purchase it from Forterra.
Correct.
Right. And so do we have thoughts of what we would be doing with that after we do purchase it from Forterra? Have we had thoughts about what we as a city need from that, what we'd be doing for this?
Right. So the proposal that we have for the Recreation and Conservation Office grants,
right,
has it as a passive park, which would include a parking lot, a small parking lot, restrooms, a trail system that would connect, you know, both with the interior of the property itself and then to other park properties as well.
Right.
And then opportunities for education around the Oxbow Channel and restoration of the site.
Right. And so do we know what the maintenance of that would be ongoing after we were to purchase it?
Well, in its current state, the maintenance would be fairly low, and it really would just be maintaining the invasive species to ensure that additional invasive species don't come onto the site, and then it would be over time then beginning that development process. So again, reaching out for grant,
right,
opportunities to do development. Ongoing maintenance would be similar to the maintenance that we have on existing sites of similar types. So it would be Al Borland Park or Lewis Street Park, where they're, you know, fairly low maintenance, just around parking lot cleaning. It would be native, so we're not talking about grassy areas or active sports parks.
Okay. 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 Right now.
Any other questions or a motion?
Anybody has?
Councilmember Davis?
I'll move to authorize the mayor to sign a memorandum of understanding with Forterra to acquire property for preservation as open space and public use, and expressly authorize further minor revisions deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion as typed in the requested action, and a second from Councilmember Davis, and a second from Councilmember Scarborough. Discussion on the motion. Councilmember Cutterback.
Oh, go ahead.
Councilmember.
Well, she was just a reminder about,
yep,
the section.
We're going to come back. I'm going to ask them. Thank you, Councilmember Cutterback.
I have a little bit of heartburn over the amount of money for the costs and paying interest on it, and that. What I do like about it is I think it could be a win-win for our city and possibly keeping it limited open space. So I just wanted to say that. I have a little bit of heartburn over the costs that we've already spent on this property, and then looking at another $500,000 possibly in interest and closing costs and environmental assessment and closing costs twice, opportunity fee, so the appraisal. So I have a little bit of heartburn over the amount of money that we'd be spending on this without any substantial benefit to our residents or to the city. Yes, we could keep it open space. I don't know if that's, you know, a primary concern right now for our residents to invest this amount of money into that for that. So, okay.
Thank you. We have a motion on the floor and a second. Any other discussion on the motion? Okay, we're not moving to a vote just yet. I'm going to respectfully request that a motion to amend be made. So I'm going to respectfully request that the council consider doing as our attorney mm-hmm. recommended to move to amend the motion to include delete on page 7, section 5I.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Camp and a second from Councilmember Rasmussen to amend the motion to include the words and delete on page 7, section 5, little I. All right, any discussion on the amended, on the motion to amend? Seeing none, we're just going to vote on the that portion to amend. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? Okay, motion passes 4-1 with Councilmember Cutterback voting against.
Oh, that was on the amendment?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, I'm for the amendment.
Okay.
I thought it was for the whole thing.
Okay, so we have a motion to amend 5-0.
Could we do it right? She has to what's the word?
Reconsider.
Reconsider. We vote on that, then she can vote again.
Okay, I haven't done that in the past. Does the body want to?
It's what we want to do.
Yeah,
it's what we're supposed to do.
Sure.
Does council? Okay. Is there a motion?
Going through the process that Councilmember Camp is fine.
Okay. Is there a motion to reconsider?
Yes.
Okay. There's a motion to reconsider.
The only
one from Councilmember Cutterback and a second from Councilmember Scarborough. Any discussion on the motion to reconsider? Okay, we'll go ahead and move to a vote. All those in favor of allowing you to reconsider the vote you just took, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. We're back to the motion to amend. The motion to amend was to, quote, to add and to the end of it and delete on page 7, section 5, little I. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, again, we're just voting on the motion to amend. All those in favor of the motion to amend, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion abstentions. Motion passes 5-0. We're now going to move back to the original motion as amended now. All those in favor, is there any discussion on the amended motion as amended with the motion to reconsider? Okay. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, abstentions. Motion passes 4-1 with Councilmember Cutterback voting against. All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to the next item. This is new business item number 4, AB 18186, authorized mayor to sign WWU Sustainable Communities contract. Ms. Knight.
Thank you very much. This was an item that was in front of council in June. The council directed staff to continue to work with Western Washington University and come back with a contract and a cost estimate with a scope of work. We received a cost estimate from Western Washington University to move forward with evaluating the US 2 bypass and trail for that bypass section. And they are proposing to engage 4 classes in this project. They're proposing to do an environmental impact statement work, some wetland delineation work, some GIS work, and some public outreach and education work. And that total contract is coming to not to exceed the amount of $28,000. The classes for Western Washington University begin at the end of September, so we're going to be working with their staff and their professors to continue to refine the scope of work, but we are asking council to move forward with the contract at this point in order to begin that process.
All right. Any questions for staff or a motion? There are no lights here. Councilmember Rasmussen.
I'll move to authorize the mayor to sign the interagency agreement between the City of Monroe and Western Washington University not to exceed $28,000 to assist the city with planning the US 2 bypass, pedestrian, bike, and equestrian trail and expressly authorize further minor revisions deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
I have a motion made by Councilmember Rasmussen with a second from Councilmember Camp for the requested action in Agenda Bill Number 18-186 as typed. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is Councilmember Reports, City Council Finance and Human Resources Report. Councilmember Gamble's not here. Is there anybody here from that committee that can provide an update? Okay, seeing none, we'll go on down to Councilmember Reports down the dais. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Parade. Mm-hmm. It's really good, as usual. Great times. And that's about it.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Yeah, same thing. Great time at the parade. And I love going every year. So.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Yeah, get to the parade here in a second, but I want to thank our city staff for giving the community an opportunity to meet our police chief candidate last week, and the opportunity to meet him and his wife, and it was a good visit. So again, thank you for that opportunity. And coincidentally, as luck would have it, he got to see some of the officers in action just 10 feet out the door that night. So it was quite interesting, but good event. I'm about going back a couple weeks ago. Brad, I want to personally thank you for the B4 committee update at the last council meeting 2 weeks ago, given that, so in my absence, and thank you. And just real quick on the P4 committee for meeting tonight, we just had the crosswalk policy. Unfortunately, I didn't have a quorum, so I'm just going to ask to have that brought to council for discussion at a future meeting, if we may.
We'll set for a future study session then.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. And then finally, the Paradise Parade. You know, Vaughn was here earlier today, and great job to her and Janelle from the chamber, as well as all of our city staff that put that on. It's definitely a joint effort. You know, for me, it's an event that my entire family looks forward to. My father flies up from Idaho to be our driver every year. It's always very special. And, you know, the Todd Johnson Speedway Chevrolet issuing the cars that we get to ride in, it's always really cool to be able to ride in those. And I'm sure Councilmember Cutaback will be thrilled to know that her Cavalier was well represented in the parade still.
You
so.
Had it?
No, I didn't have it. Our Dairy Princess had it.
Oh.
So, you know, it's still doing very well.
Yeah.
But thank you to everyone, and the Faraday's parade was awesome. So, once again.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutaback. I was going to call Hanford's tags there. Councilmember Cutaback.
I'm never going to live down that Cavalier.
It's
going to come up every year around the fair time. And I was not there this year. I was on vacation, so nothing else to report.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Well, the fair was the highlight, obviously, and I got to ride the new police car, the 427 Corvette with a 5-speed.
Okay, so it's not electric.
No. Was it a hybrid?
No. It was very good.
You should see prisoner transport on one of those.
I still want a horse 1 year.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
I want to ride a horse 1 year. That's all I have.
Thank you, sir.
Does it have to be wooden or a live horse? It
has to be a live.
Okay.
City Clerk records update. Ms. Atkinson's not here this evening. Her information is in the packet there. Ms. Knight, do you have anything additional to report on hers?
I don't, other than council should note that the chamber remodel is moving along, and we should be back in for your first meeting in September.
Okay.
We will have a couple of policy issues related to some of the new equipment, and we're going to try and set up an opportunity for you to come in and preview that equipment just so you'll be prepared to use it appropriately on the 11th.
Yeah, just to give you a couple of items there, in addition to the microphones being different than what we had before, you're actually able to vote on the base of the microphones. So literally, if you wanted to, I could just simply say, go ahead and cast your votes. You're able to vote yes, no, or abstain, and then it'll display on a screen if you want to do that. We also have the ability to have cameras installed, both with having video that is just put on the web, or video that is actually streamed live. So there are a couple things that we'd like to talk with you to find out what the body would like to do, and so if you'd like, you can certainly poke your head in there if they're not working and kind of see the way things are coming along. We're also working with the Historical Society to get some black and white images to put up in there, some pictures, and so I think you're going to really like the way things look when we move in there. Anything further from hers?
Nothing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go on out. Economic development update, Ms. Knight.
That's actually been moved to September 11th. We had a couple of vacations, and so we weren't able to pull together all the data.
Thank you. Finance update, Ms. Hasser.
So would you prefer me up there?
You're fine there.
Okay. So in your packet, you have the July finance update. We're still looking pretty strong and steady with regards to our general fund. Revenues are exceeding expenditures through the first 7 months, so that's always a good sign. As far as like some of our larger revenue streams, sales taxes, real estate excise taxes, we are ahead of the weighted budgeted expectations. So again, good to see. The investment reports, the interest rate earnings continue to climb slow but steady. The most recent investment we purchased has a yield to maturity of 2.65%. It has been a long time since we've seen anything above 2%, so that's also good for us from that aspect. While it's not in July, our fiscal audit has begun during August. You guys should have seen by email the engagement letters that were sent out by the auditors. They are doing both the city's audit as well as the Transportation Benefit District. We are on a two-year cycle with that. That one is practically wrapped up already. They have already completed the financial audit, so on the financial reports, everything looked good. They've done the areas of emphasis this year included whether we are a financial growth going concern. That has already been determined that we are. Self-insurance, we don't do much with regards to self-insurance, so that's pretty much wrapped up. The area that they're probably going to spend the most time in for this audit cycle is procurement. They are also looking at cash receipting and restricted funds. Restricted meaning, for example, real estate excise tax, as we know, are restricted as to how you can and cannot spend them, the drug seizure funds, things of that nature. They want to make sure that we are spending them the way they are meant to be spent. So far, I have my regular weekly meetings with the auditors. They let me know how things have been going. And so far, there's been nothing of concern brought up. So we're good.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Hasser? All right. Mr. Worthen, HR and
I'll
IT
come
update.
Up because I can't see Councilmember Cutterback. So in your packet is some open positions. We've had a few people leave for varying reasons. One person got a significant promotion at a city of Lake Stevens. I'm sure you've all heard of that. So if you see Gene, thank you for stealing our employees again. Another person took a part-time position for a better work-life balance. So we have a couple positions open. One other item of note that I did not include in the packet is the Salary Commission is scheduled to meet in August. I was having trouble getting that quorum, so I will be meeting with them on Thursday, September 6th at 4:30. So we will go over salaries, compensation for the mayor and the council, and I will bring back their recommendations as soon as they're done. Could be one meeting, could be two, it's hard to say. So, any other questions?
Outstanding. Thank you. Let's see if there are updates from Public Works. Mr. Cowper. Okay. Mr. Swanson.
Just one quick thing. The Snohomish County Tomorrow annual assembly will be on September 26th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. at the Everett Station Warehouse. I did send you the invitation in your emails, and you can register from there.
All right. Thank you. City Administrator, Ms. Mayer.
Just to review some items on the extended agenda, just a reminder that your Tuesday, the 4th meeting has been canceled in observance of Labor Day. And for your first meeting in your remodeled council chambers on September 11th, we will be doing an ordinance with intent to annex. This is just a less than an acre piece of property up at the edge of Chain Lake Road that Mainview Homes has purchased. Mm-hmm. The other items that we have coming forward, and I'm sure Ms. Hassard is pleased to announce this, the debt policy will finally be coming to council out of the Finance Committee, and that we're going to be talking about the 2019 legislative agenda now that we've selected our consultants to assist us down in Olympia. On Tuesday the 18th, this is a study session, and I'm wondering about the council's interest in having an update on the 191st Street project.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a request then to just move forward with the crosswalk policy too, so we'll have that on that same meeting.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I'm on vacation that day.
I guess we'll be moving that meeting. Well, not that meeting, those items, excuse me.
What was the comment?
Brad's on vacation.
He's on vacation.
Brad's on vacation.
So we won't have the update on 193?
Or the crosswalk policy on that day. It'll have to move to the first study session on Tuesday, October 2nd.
Enjoy yourself.
Thank you.
And then everything else really is about the budget as you look forward into the upcoming week. Ms. Hassard and I have TBD.
That is a little outside the norm there. We have it
October 9th,
6 p.m. September 18th at 6:30 will be.
Oh, I see that. Right, nice big letters. You and I missed it both.
So for the so that the Transportation Benefit District can adopt its 2019 budget.
Oh. Yep, and then Ms. Hester and I have been meeting with department directors to go over individual budgets, and we are on schedule to bring you the mayor's recommended budget right at the end of September, and then start the discussions about those department budgets with you over the next several weeks in October. So right on schedule.
Okay. Any questions? All right. As for me, first, I was really saddened to hear about the departure of Senator McCain. I did notice some chatter on Facebook yesterday about the flags. The flags were not put at half staff on Saturday. We didn't have staff working at the time. I was not aware yesterday. I would encourage anybody that if you see something, give me a call. I understand that there was an issue at the White House yesterday, and following our usual protocol, we would have been looking for a proclamation from the White House or from the governor. Staff did not receive either until later in the day. I just would have understood that somebody of that stature would have naturally had a proclamation from our president and from our governor, and neither happened. So as I have said before, please give me a call if you see something of concern in our community. Something like that, if I had been aware, had not been done earlier in the day, it would have been done right away. So as I posted on my personal page, the way that he approached governance as opposed to politics is something that's really important to me. I loathe partisanship. I think it's important to work with people, and he seemed to hold some of those same values that I have. Or at least that I strive for. He's going to be missed. One of the things that I saw frequently on the Sunday morning shows was, who's going to replace him? It's an easy answer. Every single one of us needs to do our part to work outside of the partisan institutions that seem to restrict our ability to be civil and to just simply govern. So I would encourage each one of us to, rather than looking at somebody else to make the difference, to look at yourself in the mirror and to work with one another in a civil way to make that difference. So the flags will be at half staff according to the flag protocol that that you all reviewed a couple years ago and approved. And again, feel free to call me in the future if there's an issue. Also, today we went ahead and extended a conditional offer to Mr. Jolly, Jeffrey Jolly. We had three panels, probably a total of 15 to 18 people. 18 people interview him across three panels. All in all, we probably had at least two dozen people that interviewed him in some capacity. I received very good comments from everybody. I think that he will do well as our next chief of police. With that said, the conditional offer had a couple things. One, he needs to go through a background check, a medical check, and a whole bunch of other things. The process takes about 4 to 6 weeks to go through. He then would be presented to you if everything checks out as an appointment, just like with a planning commission or a director, to you for your consideration for confirmation. If you have any questions that arise over the next couple of weeks and you'd like me to get a hold of him, I'm certainly willing to get a hold of him. Otherwise, you'll have an opportunity to ask questions of him, well, not here, but over in chambers. And then, what else with that? His first date, the date that he would like to begin work is roughly December 1st. He's got a couple of things that he really wants to complete at his current place of work, and I think all of us can respect the value of bringing somebody on board that wants to, you know, complete something on his way out. So, again, if you've got any questions, please feel free to ask me, ask Ms. Knight, or ask Mr. Worthen. I think he's going to do well for our city and for our community. I think that's all that I have to report right now. There's no further business this evening, so did you have something?
I do. I had just two quick things I forgot to mention. Thank you. One is that we are planning a joint meeting with the Parks Board and the East County Park and Recreation District to talk about the proposal to bring forth in the November 2019 budget a bond and levy measure. So it'll be a joint bond and levy measure between the county, the city, and the Park and Rec District. The second item I have is just to let you know that we have sent out the applications for the Economic Development Advisory Board. They're due back on September 14th. And so if you know of anybody who might be interested in serving on that board, have them check the city's website for the application materials.
Okay. There's no further... Councilmember Scarborough, cut it back.
For the... Did you say a levy? Going for a levy or a bond? What did you...
Instead of a bond and levy measure.
Okay. And what is that for?
So it would be for parks within the East County Park and Rec District,
right?
Including then park acquisition and park improvements within the city of Monroe.
Okay. So land acquisition and improvements?
Right.
Improvements at Lake Ty or Al Borland? Or mainly the what's it, the Eastside Park District? That's kind of the Malpe areas.
Right, so right. The East County Park and Rec District is looking for improvements at Maltby Park.
Right.
The city is looking for improvements and property acquisition within the city of Monroe, yet to be determined.
Okay, yet to be determined. Okay.
Right, and then Snohomish County is also looking at parks within the county, yet to be determined.
Okay.
Within the
unincorporated
district.
Portion of Snohomish County within the district.
Okay.
Anything further this evening? All right, we have no further business. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
Do you want things?
No. Thank you for asking.
Oh, you guys, well, that's weird. Well,
order.